Hi.
Hi.
If you guys are here for Shane Claiborne, you better run. I think you left. How many of you were here for Shane Claiborne, actually? Cool. Well, way to stick around. So the last question that he was asked, I was here for the tail end. I was really interested in hearing what he would have to say, because Shane... is this good? Okay, it's good. Shane wrote the foreword to the book. Have you guys seen the book? Okay, cool. And I'm running for Congress now. And I'm doing it because I'm sick of the way politics is happening in the country at the moment. I'm tired of the Democrats. I'm tired of the Republicans. And I'm tired of having to choose a candidate. I'm tired of having to choose between someone who is against abortion and someone who is for the environment. Someone who's consistently for life, for a culture of life. And so that's why I chose to run. I'm running as a Democrat, but I'm running as a pro-life, consistent Democrat. Very much what Shane talked about. But it's a really important question that he was asked. Is it possible for a Christian today to run for office and participate in our system of government and still remain faithful? And I don't honestly know the answer to that. That's why I'm doing this, to try and figure that out. So we'll see, I guess. But maybe he should run. That'd be crazy. He'd get all our votes, and that would be about it, huh? Oh, well. Fortunately, you need more than 50% to get into office. Maybe he wouldn't want to get it. You know Tony Campolo ran for Congress back in the 70s? Yeah, he ran in Pennsylvania, 5th District. He was a Democrat back... Well, he still is a Democrat. What am I saying? He ran for office, and the Democrat before him got 14% of the vote in his district. The Democrat after him got 18% of the vote. He got 44. Is that cool? So, yeah, anyway. So we've been trying this for a while, and we're going to try it again. My name is Ben, and I'm not here to talk to you about politics. I'm here to talk to you about this stuff. How many of you go to a Christian campus? Oh, cool. What campuses are you guys at? Okay, great. And?
Calvin College.
Ah.
Cool.
Geneva College. Geneva in Pennsylvania? Nice. All right. Anyone else? Okay, and then how many of you go to pagan campuses? Okay, where do you go?
Cal Poly in San Luis Obispo, California.
Okay.
Fresno State in Fresno, California.
Fresno. I got friends in Fresno.
Texas A&M.
Yeah, we've met. Yes, cool.
Virginia Tech.
Virginia Tech, okay. Yeah.
University of Wisconsin-Madison.
Oh, cool.
I don't go to school.
That's okay.
Carnegie Mellon.
Carnegie Mellon, sweet. Carnegie. Both, okay.
Paul University in Chicago.
Oh, nice. Nice.
University of Battery.
Okay.
Me too.
Ta-da! You know, I hear that sometimes people meet at Urbana and they get married in the end. No pressure. Sorry, I get to have fun, and I get to make things as awkward for other people. So, cool. Where do you go to school? Oh, yeah, right, Calvin. Yeah. Sorry.
I graduated, but I went to Penn State.
Okay, cool.
I go to St. Louis College Farm.
Okay.
I go to
Oh, sweet. Campus? Are you in college?
Lenore Ryan University.
Okay, cool.
University of Nebraska, because I'm done.
Nice.
University of New Mexico.
All right.
Allen Hancock Community College.
Cool.
Same.
Nice.
Michigan.
University of Illinois? Oh, good thing I'm not doing that talk here.
What?
Okay, cool. If we, those of us who do a lot of talks sometimes have stock talks that we repeat, and this way it's new material for you. Yeah. You bet. You betcha. All right, well, I got some resources. I'll start passing them around now. The first, if you're interested, there's a Creation Care Institute taking place in Santa Barbara, California. A beautiful spot. And the next is an organization that I help head up called Renewal. It's a student movement. It's like the environmental university. Or so we like to pretend we are. Or like the environmental acting on AIDS, if you guys are familiar with that. And since this is a small enough group, I'll also pass around some business cards in case you guys have any questions later that you don't get to ask and you'd like to follow up. I'd be happy to do that. So what I'd like to use this time for is to just get practical. I'll tell you a little bit about my story. I'll tell you a little bit about what's going on. And then I'll tell you a little bit about what I think the opportunities are for and what's needed today. And then open up for questions. Sound good? Okay. Oh, here's my outline. We'll see how much we stick to it. Okay. Assumptions that I'm coming in here with. The current environmental situation is unsustainable. We're on a bad trajectory. The Earth, the planet, in many ways is actually dying. And that's not a good thing. Christians are called to love God and love our neighbor by caring for his creation. We are both the bad guys and the victims of environmental degradation. But we can be, and we're supposed to be, we're created to be the heroes as well. And the last one, which I'm just going to sneak in there, and we can talk more later, climate change is real, it's a problem, and it's affecting people today, and we need to do something about it. Start off with a story. I was born and raised in Singapore and Malaysia. I'm a missionary kid, OMF. Came to this country when I was 16. Came from the British public school system in Singapore to the American public school system in Boston. Yeah, that was a shock to the system, my system. To give you an idea, my job in Singapore, how many of you watched Harry Potter and heard of prefects? Okay, so I was the head prefect in charge of a school of over 1,000 all boys, and it was my job to decide who got caned. And then I came to the US, and it was a co-ed school, of course, but that was a weird thing for me, and we didn't cane. In fact, we didn't even have uniforms, we didn't have to do hair checks, we didn't have to do drills, it was crazy. But I tell you that story, because I spent a couple years in Boston, and every summer in Boston on the Cape, on Cape Cod, a pod of pilot whales will beach itself. Sometimes multiple pods every summer. So these whales, these smaller whales, and we don't quite know why they beach themselves. There's a lot of different theories out there. But often when one or two of the whales get into distress and they get stranded, the rest of the pod ends up on the beach as well. They don't drown. What they do is they dehydrate. Whales breathe air, like us, they're mammals. And they dry out in the sun. And that's why they die. So imagine if you were, if you will, there's a jogger running down the beach on Cape Cod early, 6 o'clock in the morning. Who knows why they're running that early, but they are. And they're running down the beach and they come across a whale, 2-3 ton whale, kind of lying there, flopping helplessly in the surf, starting to dry out as the sun rises. And they see the whale. And like hopefully most of us, definitely a lot of us, when we see animals in distress, we have compassion. It's something that's kind of built into our system. Just like when we see that polar bear on the ice, you know? Polar bear, well, tangent. So we see the whale thrashing in the water and filled with compassion, rips off the shirt and runs. Oh, by the way, when I first told this story, I was trying to be very sensitive and wanted to be gender inclusive and everything. So I said, and this woman jogger comes running down and she rips off her shirt. I was like, oh no. So now it's a male jogger. He rips off his shirt, runs into the surf, soaks in the water, and he runs up to the whale and he's kind of sponging the whale off, keeping it cool, keeping it hydrated. And he's doing this. He keeps doing this for about 5-10 minutes. The whale is huge, right? So he's not going to move it. A couple tons. And another jogger comes down. She sees this runner and he's sponging off the whale and she looks at him and she looks up and she sees this. Because when one whale beaches itself, usually 50 others beach themselves as well. And she looks from the guy with that whale to those whales and she goes up to him and says, sir, it's great that you're trying to help here, but really, what difference are you making? And the guy stops and he freezes and he looks at the whale, and he looks at the shirt, and he looks at her, and he looks up, and he sees the other whales. And then he looks up again, and he says, I'm making a difference to this one. You guys heard this story before? Lauren Easley, starfish, you know, throwing them back. Okay. Well, I'm not just ripping off someone else's story. I tell you this because this happens every year in Cape Cod, but it doesn't stop there. Now, the second jogger, she's right. Well, the first jogger, he's right, too. He's right because he is making a difference to this world. And as Christians, we're called to be faithful, not necessarily successful. God's in control. He's the one that works out those details. We're called to be faithful. And if that's what he could do, if taking care and showing compassion to that whale, all that starfish was what he could do, then that is what he should do, and he was doing a good job. On the other hand, the second jogger, she was right too. She makes a good point. If we define success by saving the whales, haha, good environmental story there, by saving the whales, then he's a failure. What if instead of just gawking at the guy or criticizing him or whatever the case is, and we've probably all had lots of people in our lives who've told us that what we want to do, what we're dreaming, our vision for the world, the calling that we feel God leading us in is impossible, or it's just not going to work, or it's too idealistic, or whatever it is. What if instead of being that person who says it's impossible, so what if instead she runs back to town, or in the age of cell phones, she whips out her cell phone, she calls her friends, she calls her family, they alert the news, they run it first thing in the morning, 8 o'clock news, and all of a sudden the community mobilizes and you have hundreds and thousands of people streaming down to the beach to save the whales. That's what happens when a pod of pilot whales beach themselves. Cape Cod, South Africa, Australia, wherever it is, people mobilize and they come down. They understand that this problem is too big for one person to solve, and so we need to work together. I would like to declare that the environmental crisis that we're facing today is infinitely larger and more urgent than a pod of pilot whales beached on Cape Cod. And we need to make a transition from thinking about what can I do in my lifestyle, which is very important, and it's about faithfulness, and God is going to hold us accountable for the energy we use, the waste we produce, the resources we consume, the ways we are a blessing to the rest of the world and to our neighbors. We're going to be held accountable to that. But we need to also think, this is a bigger problem than just me switching my light bulb in my home or in my bedroom. This is a problem for all of us. This is a problem that we need all of us to mobilize and come together to work on. And that's what we as a church are called to do. And so just as we're held accountable as individuals, I believe we're held accountable as a church. So that's what I've dedicated this portion of my life to. I believe the challenges we're faced with today, environmental, and I got started in this as a missionary kid. I wanted to have the greatest impact for Christ in the world possible. Greatest impact. So I was going to become a medical missionary. I'm also half Asian, so you know the medical missions fit really well with my parents' wishes there. Well, that wasn't going to work out. So I thought, well, I'll become a pastor. Yeah, that wasn't going to work out. My parents weren't interested in me doing that at all. But I got to college and I started taking science classes. And I started looking, we started looking at the major crises of the world today: food, energy, water, a lot of the wars, natural disasters, epidemics, and disease. Guess what? They all have environmental roots to them. They all require environmental solutions. But they're not just environmental, they all have roots. And the biggest problem that we're facing today, the root of all of our problems, sin. Environmental problems aren't just science problems, they're moral problems, they're sin problems. And the only people who have any chance of offering a solution that will be holistic enough to address both of those areas are us, the church. And so if we're not in this, then we're not going to fix this. I really believe that. So I dedicated my life to mobilizing towards collective action, community organizing, campus organizing, and that's what we did. That's what I did. I went to Wheaton College, and I got there, and you guys are going to hear this from a lot of people if you already haven't started hearing it already, and people tell Shane this all the time. People tell all of us all the troublemakers. We get this a lot. You're too idealistic. It's impossible. People told me at Wheaton, Wheaton College, very conservative school. Environmental issues was a fringe, marginal issue. And people made fun of those, you know, tree-hugging, granola-eating, no-shower-week hippies. And I didn't want to be one of those folks, honestly. I was a good pastor's kid, missionary's kid. They told me it's always going to be a fringe issue like that. Well, we had 2 years. Within 2 years, we took environmental stewardship from being a marginal issue to being a central priority on campus among the students, among the faculty, among the staff, among the administration. 2 years. Anything is possible. There's a Barbie slogan, anything is possible with Barbie. Anything is possible with God. The question is not, is it possible? The question is it necessary? And I believe it is necessary. So we sparked this movement, and it's been really exciting. The last 2 years or so, I've been traveling from campus to campus to campus, helping campuses replicate what is going on, both in the secular world, because let's be honest, people outside the church, they get this. And a lot of our generation, they're really good. They're good organizers, they're good act. They know how to fight for change. But a lot of times, a lot of my colleagues outside the church, they're fighting out of anger. They're fighting out of fear. That's not us. Here's something else we bring to the table. We fight out of love. We fight out of hope. We fight because we're not worried, scared to death that we're gonna destroy the whole world. We fight because we know that God has a better plan, another world that he intends for all of his creation. Not just humans, but all of it. So we bring a lot to the table. And we, these are pictures from all over. There's Eastern University, there's Wheaton College, there's Goshen, there's Redeemer University College in Canada, there's Pennsylvania, just out by Geneva, and that's Bethel in Minnesota. But what we're seeing is so those are all Christian campuses, sorry, just my photos. But we're seeing groups of students, Christian students on campuses around the country who are saying, you know what, we have a blind spot. This is really important. Our generation is going to have to address environmental issues. We can't hide from them anymore. They're all over the news. They're all in our face. That's what our generation cares about. We've inherited this. Our chance here, our opportunity is to decide to take this issue and really run with it. And I believe we can. So, let's see. Renewal is the organization we launched. It's a student-led environmental movement. It's just about a year and a half old. It's now active on over 50 Christian campuses. And we have a very strong, active partnership with InterVarsity Christian Fellowship. So on Christian campuses, a lot of times they don't have anything going environmentally. Or they do, and they need resources. Calvin is a great example of a campus that has long been a champion of environmental stewardship, but the student group often suffers from transitions up and down. Leadership comes and goes, poor resources, lack of training. This is what I felt. I felt very alone as an organizer on a Christian campus. And so we come in and we help resource and network those folks. But then on secular campuses as well, there are great secular environments. How many of you on a secular campus know of an environmental group on your campus, at least one? Okay. How many of you don't know of an environmental group on your campus? Or don't know that it exists? Okay. That's it. Most secular campuses have really strong environmental groups and really strong InterVarsity or Campus Crusade chapters, but they don't talk to each other. And actually, it's not that they just don't talk to each other. There's usually some animosity between InterVarsity is pretty progressive, but at least the environmental community looks at Christians and thinks, weirdos. When I first said I was running for Congress, when I was asked and when I accepted the invitation to run for Congress, some people freaked out at me. Environmentalists freaked out at me. You know why? He's going to promote the teaching of creationism in public schools. This creation evolution wedge has so divided us on these issues that Christians and scientists have a hard time getting together and finding common ground, even though a lot of our most brilliant scientists today and in history are Christians. Sir John Houghton, arguably the world's leading climate change scientist, out of the UK is an evangelical Christian. Houghton, H-O-U-G-H-T-O-N. No relation to the campus in New York, though they would like to claim it. And Francis Collins, how many of you have heard of him? Okay. Are you a science person?
Yeah, well, my dad's a scientist, so he's like a science nut,
so okay.
I read his books and stuff.
Cool. Language of God? Excellent. So he headed up the Human Genome Project. He's now, Obama placed him as the head of the National Institute of Health, right? NIH, yeah, National Institute of Health. I got that wrong last time. So he's an outspoken evangelical Christian who's written books about how he, as a Christian, does science and why it's so important and integral to his faith. So we've got these bridges that we need to build. So let's say, when I'm invited to come to an university chapter or a secular campus to talk, what I do is I say, what are you doing in partnership with the environmental group? And usually it's nothing, and that's okay, because there's a lot of baggage here, but what can we do? And so when I visited the University of Illinois. Sorry, who was from there? Yeah, okay. Visited U of I, and before I came, their chapter sent teams of folks to the different environmental clubs and groups on campus. And they sat in on their meetings. Do you remember this?
Yeah, it was a huge, like, evangelism thing
and everything. Yeah, and by the way, evangelism goes both ways. And as much as we share our faith with them, they share their experience and expertise with us as well. And that's the cool thing, because there's a lot of sharing to do. Sharing and caring, it's so fun. There's a lot of sharing to do in these issues. So it's late, it's the whole end of the conference, and I drive out right after this, so I'm a little punchy. and so they sent teams. And you know, they came to the meetings, and as Christians, they said, we're Christians, and we're sorry that we haven't been more active, more engaged, more helpful before. But we're here, we're glad for what you guys are doing. We want to hear, we want to learn, and we want you to know that we care now too, and that we're doing this event, and that we're talking about the environment and what it has to do with our faith, and we'd like to invite you to be a part of this as well. It's really cool. I don't know if you guys have any info on the outcome, you know, whether there are those. Okay, it's hard to measure these things, but I can tell you that the first night I was there, when I sat down in the random crowd, you know, no one knew who I was, I didn't know who anyone else was, and I sat down next to a student and I started talking to them. The student came because he was interested. He was a science major, interested in hearing what the Christians had to say about the environment. So I don't know where he left, but we're having those conversations, and that's worth it. That's really cool. Okay. So what should we be doing? We need a movement. Our generation really needs to take this. Here's what we can do. Our model at Renewal is pray, serve, advocate. And then I gotta throw in celebrate. We always celebrate. We celebrate when we start, we celebrate when we're done, we celebrate straight through, we celebrate when we succeed, and we celebrate when we fail. But we celebrate. And those folks, they had a big old party. Montreat, they had a Garden of Eden, which I thought was really creative. So those are a couple of our student leaders there. And then pray, serve, and advocate. We start everything by prayer. You know, prayer is the foundation of what we do. Prayer doesn't prepare us. Who was the person that said this? Was it Oswald Chambers or someone maybe a little older? Prayer does not prepare us for the greater work. Prayer is the greater work, and we really believe that. So we start everything with prayer, and every year we organize Katie, what do we organize? National Day of Prayer for Creation Care. Awesome. Thank you. And what we do is we join with campuses and groups all around the country and churches, and we take a day where we pray in the fall, just pray for what's going on in the world around us. The next thing we do is serve. Faith without works is dead. And we believe we are called to actually get our hands dirty in this caring for creation stuff. So you'll see on the left, that's a group of students in Florida helping to restore a dune, beach dune, with beach grasses. I don't know exactly what the name of those grasses are. I'm partly from Florida. I'm partly from a lot of places, it feels like. But yeah, it's hot, but it's cool. And they're doing a good work. We've got groups around the country who are planting campus gardens, planting community gardens, cleaning up rivers and streams, cleaning up highways even. planting trees, going on environmental missions trips, all sorts of stuff, going into the inner city to help with environmental projects. There's a lot of pollution in the inner city, and folks there, the kids there grow up, they don't see trees. I lived it wasn't quite fully inner city, in a relatively inner city neighborhood in Chicago, in the Pilsen neighborhood, for a year on the south side, and not quite the south side. Near south side, you can't claim south side in Pilsen. But we had two of the most polluting coal-fired power plants in the whole Midwest region in Pilsen Little Village, the neighborhood next to us. We were a minority neighborhood, Mexican largely, but generally Hispanic. Guess how much of the energy we got from those power plants? Guess how much energy the city of Chicago got from those power plants? There are real environmental justice issues that we should be fighting against. So that leads me to the next piece, which is advocate. And there's a group of us in DC, I was a student back then, meeting with then our Senator Barack Obama, who got recently a pay raise, I hear. He's also like everybody's punching bag right now, apparently. It's rough. He's having a tough time. But advocacy, that's what we often think about when we think advocacy. And there we send a lot of students with our partners and all to places like DC or to state houses to lobby for change, lobby for legislation, to help the environment, to help poor people struggling with environmental issues. However, that's not the end of advocacy. Because as Christians, what we mean by advocacy is speaking up on behalf of those who do not have a voice. That's people and our poor neighbors, but that's also frogs and butterflies and birds and polar bears and whales. And our folks in DC aren't the only ones who need to hear this message. Our campus administration needs to get this message. They need to know we care. Our pastors need to get this message. They need to know we care. Our community leaders, our parents, advocacy is a very holistic thing that we're involved in. It's basically evangelism right there, okay? So that's application. A little note, well, we talked a little bit about Christian campuses. Some of you are from there. And this is where it's very different to organize on a Christian campus versus a secular campus. So I'm trying to bridge both here, and I want it to be helpful. So we'll tackle a lot of that in the questions and answers, depending on what you want to find out. But basically, the general idea is on a campus, in order to really take environmental stewardship seriously, here are some things, some tools and some resources that are really super helpful we found. Campuses that are leading these areas, including Harvard and Middlebury and Calvin and Wheaton, sometimes, they do these things. They have a locus for conversation, which means they have a task force or a committee, whatever it is, that includes all the stakeholders on the campus. Students, faculty, staff, admin, alumni, trustees. A task force that's devoted to talking about sustainability or stewardship and pursuing it. So that's really important. Having a student group active on campus is vital as well, because usually administrations, this is one of those politically tricky issues for administrations to lead on. If you're a conservative school, we know why it's politically tricky. If you're not, part of the reason why it's tricky is because oftentimes there's this perception that going green means paying up more green. And it's not true. It's a very mixed bag. A lot of times we do things that are right, we save money. Sometimes we do things that are right because they're right, and we pay a cost, and that's okay, because the gospel and what's right is not revenue neutral. However, where was I going with that? Oh, having a student group on your campus is really important, because the administration needs to know that we get it and we care, and this is what we're passionate about. They won't lead until we lead. And they'll do some stuff, but they'll really get the fire going when we step up. And we've seen that on campus after campus. So you guys are really important on your campus. A lot of community gardens and campus gardens starting up. And so if you are interested in getting something going, check and see if your campus has something already. If not, there is probably a campus very nearby you, you know, within very short driving distances you can visit, that has something going that is within your size, your capacity, whatever it is that you can learn from and bring expertise back home into. A lot of What else do we have going on? It's often easy to think about environmental issues as being, oh, humans, we're a cancer on the planet. We need to use less energy. We need to use less water. We need to eat less food. We need to go vegetarian. We need to do all these, or not do all these things. And it turns into a very kind of legalistic thing. And I know, because I've been craving a burger for 3 weeks now. And I know how much water it takes to produce 1 pound of beef versus 1 pound of fish or chicken or 1 pound of veggies. I know. I know the pollution that comes out of our concentrated animal feeding CAFOs today and just how destructive they are. And I know how we treat animals and how inhumane that is for the animals and for the people that have to do that and work with the animals. So I know those things. And it's hard for me, I crave beef, to withhold. If that's our entire picture of what it is to be an environmental steward, then that's a sad picture. And that's not going to be an exciting picture, not a vision that people are going to want to follow. No, we're not just called to be less of a cancer on the planet. We're called to be a freaking blessing on the planet as well. Genesis 1, we were created in the image of God. Why? Not so that we could all fight about whether we came from monkeys or not. We were created in the image of God so that it follows right after in the text, and he gave us dominion over all that he made. So we could reflect that image, those intentions, to the rest of creation, to one another. That's why we're created in his image. We're given the right to use the natural resources, to consume. That's natural. That's not inherently bad. It's bad when we, like we do a lot of things in this country, take it too far. But what we're really called to do is be a blessing, to live in harmony, the idea of shalom. And that's an exciting vision, not do less bad stuff, but let's do some good. Let's do something that's bigger than ourselves, better than ourselves. Let's fight and live for a kingdom that beats Walmart, hands down. So those are some thoughts there. Here are some obstacles that we tend to run into. Theological differences among brothers and sisters. The earth is going to burn up anyway. Why should we care? There are a lot of others. What have you heard? What have you guys heard? Theological differences. Yeah.
A lot of people tell me that, you should just try and evangelize as much as you can.
Yes. We have other priorities. We're on this earth, we're going to save as many people, bring as many people into heaven as possible, and that's what we got to do. That's a very real thing. And so those same people that say that also do not take care of their children, they don't go to work and have jobs. The idea is, I'm being facetious, the idea is we are called to evangelize. We are called to witness. But we're called to live out as if we were citizens of a different kingdom, as if we were really followers of a different government of Christ. And what that means is having compassion on everything that he created, fighting for justice in everything. Yes, we're called to tell people about Christ, but you know, it really does harm our witness if we say, I believe in a God who created and loves this world, and I don't. But I want you to believe in that God. It just kind of undermines all of that, doesn't it? If we really believe in a God who created the world, then we're going to take care of it. If you want a one-liner, my line is when people ask me about that, and I don't have time to discuss it, as I'm running away, what I say is, I'm not running away out of fear, I'm running away because I got to get somewhere, right? So what I say is, Jesus was asked, what is the greatest commandment? And what did he say? He said, to love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and to love your neighbor as yourself. I cannot love the Lord my God with all my heart, soul, mind, and strength if I do not care for the world that he made, that he sustains, that he is redeeming, and that he calls us to be stewards of. And I can't love my neighbor as myself unless I also take care of the environment, which they especially, but we all, depend on for our very survival. That's what we're called to do. Yeah, we're called to be good witnesses. We're called to disciple, to baptize. But it's a big vision. When we're called to, we're called to baptize and disciple, we're called to teach them what Christ has taught us, what Christ has modeled for us. And that includes this stuff. So a lot of theological differences. We have other priorities. Apathetic versus overwhelmed. We get hit up with a lot of issues, right? This world is messed up. Just play video games. Don't worry about it. Well, you guys are here, so we're not going to even worry about that one. You guys get it. Science and technology will save the day. Ha! I'm a science major. Science and technology is a tool. Yes, it can help save the day, but you know what? It's also why we're here to begin with. Why the day needs saving to begin with. Because it's a tool. A car in the hands of a drunk person is a disastrous tool. But a car in the hands of a sober person can be a life-giving tool. Well, to some extent, can be a very helpful tool. So it's about how we use science and technology. It's the government's responsibility. As someone running for office, I will tell you the government is not going to fix this problem. We need to fix this problem. The government needs to come alongside, needs to help. But they're not going to solve it for us. And in a democracy, we are the people. We are the government. And so we have a role to play here. Trust the markets. Anyone business major, econ major? Okay. I have talked to, I don't know why I asked that question. I was just kind of curious, I guess. A lot of Christians adhere to a very strongly free market, libertarian kind of position, and I have a lot of friends like that. And I'm not quite as far on that end as some of my friends. But I think the markets, they're a good tool as well. Here's the problem, and I've talked to some very well-known libertarian economists who are Christians who have told me, they taught me, two problems with the market. First of all, it has a lag time. Second of all, and sometimes you can't afford the lag time. And why wait for the lag time too, by the way, if we know better? Second of all, the markets don't have morals. They're a good indicator of our choices, our interests and things, but they don't have morals. And we need to use the markets. They're not our master, we're theirs. They're our tool. And we need to use them for good, but we need to realize that, like any other tool, they can be used for evil as well. The culture wars, glad you walked in, Bob. The culture wars, I'm a product of the culture wars, we all are. We grew up when abortion, gay marriage, and religious freedom, the right to protest abortion and gay marriage without persecution, and sometimes other issues get in there as well, are the defining issues of our parents' generation, and we will fight that. And you know, strong convictions are important, and standing for what is right is important as well. But sometimes our focus becomes too narrow. And I fear, as a product of culture wars, we have unnecessarily barricaded ourselves around these issues. And not only have we missed the common ground we have, you know, when it comes to talking about abortion, I'm a pro-life Democrat. That gets me in a lot of trouble. But here's what I mean. Abortions are tragic. We want to reduce the number of abortions and unwanted pregnancies. Everybody can agree with that. We've spent 30 years fighting Roe v. Wade. We haven't stopped one single abortion. I'd love abortions to go away. But that tactic alone hasn't proved very successful. You know what would be more successful? Better healthcare, expanded healthcare, more affordable healthcare for women. Pregnancy does not count as a pre-existing condition for receiving coverage. Adoption processes, smoother, more affordable. Fair wages so that women aren't making 77 cents to the dollar, which is what is going on right now today. Common sense solutions, getting beyond the culture wars to say, I have strong convictions and I'm going to hold on to them, and that means we're not going to agree on everything, but we agree on a lot, and what can we do? A lot of Christians, you know, I believe God made the world. I'm not going to worry as much about how he made it, whether it was 6 24-hour days or thousands of years or some punctuated equilibrium, whatever it is. I believe God made the world. You don't believe God made the world. But we both can agree that it's in trouble and we need to take care of it. We need to find common ground to move beyond the culture wars so we're not running around with our hands tied behind our backs. We can actually get together and work together. Global warming? Ask me questions if you have questions. Just a trend, it's not just a trend. It might be, you know, AIDS was really trendy 5 to 10 years ago, and now it's kind of lost its trendiness. And I'm good friends with the person who founded Acting on AIDS, which is on many campuses. And they just rebranded themselves as ACTS so that they can keep moving forward with advocacy. We don't want environmental stewardship to become another trend because we can't afford that. This is going to be an issue that's going to be throughout our lifetimes until Christ comes back. And until Christ comes back, the church needs to be faithful in standing up for it. Here's one opportunity coming up, National Day of Prayer for Creation Care. We're partnering with everybody now. It's not just a student campus thing, it's everybody. There's going to be a march from West Virginia to D.C. We're marching 300 miles. I'm getting a couple pairs of new sneakers. And we're going to rally by the Capitol, on the lawn of the Capitol in D.C. May 25th. Check it out online if you're interested in more information. I passed out those flyers for the Training Institute. And here are resources in case they're helpful. The ones that are highlighted yellow are specifically for students and campuses. Otherwise, if they're not highlighted, then they're broader, but still really valuable resources to check out. The bottom ones, more general, would probably be active on secular campuses. The top ones apply to everybody. All right. Here's what I want to leave you with before we go into questions. You're really important. I was one student on what people like to call, and I think it's silly, but the evangelical flagship college campus in the country, Wheaton. I was one student, and people told me we could not change the culture of the campus to care about the environment, to care about God's creation. But we decided it was necessary. And so we prayed, we served, we advocated, and we celebrated the heck out of everything. And in 2 years, Wheaton has become known as a leader in sustainability among Christian campuses. I wrote Green Revolution. People told me, we decided we need to get this message out. And I don't want to burn the fuel necessary to fly everywhere to yak my head off talking about it. And I'm much better when I have time to write it out than just talking anyway. So I thought, let's write a book. People told me, you're 24, Ben. 24-year-olds don't write books. But we decided it was necessary. And so we wrote the book. And I became the youngest IVP author. But if you're under 24, you can have me beat. A lot of people are going to tell you that a lot of things are impossible. I hear that not every day that I'm running. People say, it's impossible. You're too poor to run. You're not a millionaire. Do you know that everybody who runs for office tends to be a millionaire? You can't. It's not for me to decide what's possible. It's not for us to decide what's possible. We are given time on this earth. We're following Christ's risen Lord. Until he comes back, until he finishes bringing his kingdom on earth, we're called to fight, we're called to live, we're called to die for this kingdom. We've got a lot of work to do. It's not impossible. And you guys are really important. I'm really glad you're here. And together, we can really do some good. So what are your questions? Yes.
Green Team.
Yeah.
CIU.
Yeah.
And we got it started. We got paper cycling going and things like that. But
which grant was it? The CCCU grant or?
It was something just for South Carolina.
Okay.
And they emailed us back and said everything that doesn't show up. So, do you
sad.
Have any resources for money or people who have been students who are willing to pick up the bids?
You bet. So question was, trying to get recycling going, need money to buy bins, and got rejected from a grant. How can we go about doing this as students? Well, here's a story, and I can connect you to this person. Got up at Trinity National University, also just outside Chicago, named Jesse. He wanted to do the same thing, and he ended up working with his physical plant, and he found money to buy bins. They went in one semester from having 4 recycling bins on campus, I think it was, to just about 100 recycling bins. It was all student-driven, student-led. There is money out there. More importantly, there are people who will donate the recycling bins themselves to you. I've heard of them. So follow up with me maybe in an email or something if you have my card, and then we can try and get the specifics worked out for your area. Cool. But I'm glad to hear that. That's good. That's good stuff. There's no reason that every campus shouldn't be recycling in the 21st century. Other questions? Yeah?
Where are other ways to reconcile between
what environmental groups, to be a resource to them, I think. Instead of saying, what do I want out of them? You know, I want so many commitment cards. It's to say, what can we do for them? And that starts to, so it comes, it's a very relational thing. I found. So finding out where their needs are. Most of the time, environmental groups themselves, even on secular campuses, tend to be a little on the marginalized side of things. And they need help. They need people. They need enthusiasm. They're often discouraged and frustrated. Not all the time, but there's usually a strain that runs through these groups like that. So what I would say is figure out when they're doing an event and talk to them, say, you know, we have a group of 5 or 10 folks and we'd like to come help. What can we do? And show up and just support what they're doing. And then start the conversations. Yeah. Other questions? Yeah.
If you don't mind sharing, how has your becoming a young IDP author affected your relationship with God?
How has my becoming a young IVP author affected my relationship with God? Writing the book was a very purifying process. Speaking after Shane fills up an auditorium this size is a very humbling process. That's an interesting question. I've never been asked that before, so kudos to you. I'm not sure if I'm going to be able to answer it very well directly, but I can tell you my relationship with God as I've gotten involved in this work, which writing a book was part of. My life has gotten increasingly intense, and I always do not feel prepared for the next step. I do not know what I'm doing running for Congress right now. I am 25. I think, and we heard this from one of the speakers at the very beginning, when we say yes to God, we don't say yes once, and then that's it. We say yes, and then we say yes again, and then we say yes again, and again, and again, again, until the next time we say yes, the next step we take brings us before God himself. And so every time we say yes, and the more we say yes, the more we're willing to give up our fears, which I have a lot of, insecurities, which I have even more of, and say yes, means the crazier of a ride God often takes us on. It's horribly uncomfortable. But I also find that it's when I'm comfortable that I learn to depend on myself. And it's when I'm uncomfortable that I have no choice but to stay very close to God. So, yeah, hopefully that helps answer your question a little bit. Other questions? No one's gonna ask me about Al Gore. Everybody asks me about Al Gore. You guys wanna know about Al Gore? You know he's a Christian? Now you can argue it might not be possible to be a faithful Christian and be the Vice President of the United States, and that's a completely legitimate question, and I share that. But he claims, he says he's a Baptist. So remember when he got fussed at by having such a big home and using so much energy and so many resources? Well, do you guys remember that at all? You got a real bad rap? Okay, so I was giving a bad rap for that too. I was like, how ridiculous. This is how Christians are different. We're not gonna be hypocrites. Well, first of all, I found out he was a Christian, then I felt embarrassed. And then second of all, he moved into that home. He and Tipper, what a fun name, both have their offices out of their home. They run their entire staff out of their home. That's why it's the size it is, because they keep it all together so they're not traveling all around the place and setting up different outposts all over the place. And when he moved in and did that too, he's probably living way more lavishly than you and I would choose to. And I sleep on the floor, so I get that. But he wanted to set up solar panels and drill geothermal and do other kind of things to get his energy from clean resources, but the city wouldn't give him the permits to do it. And so while they were wrangling it out and arguing and trying to get those permits, the press comes by and someone tips them off. And they go, wow, Al Gore, huge footprint, huge resource and consumption and really bad steward and everything. And he was trying. He was just trying to work within the system. And the system was not very helpful there. And so he got all this bad rap. And the city felt bad and gave him the permits. And now he got solar and all that other stuff out of his home. So, I think my lesson that I took away from that is we need to be careful about what we say about other people. That plank and the sawdust, that Jesus talks about, that's real, and that affects all of us, especially when it is with environmental issues like this, where it's easy to say, look at me, or look at the guy driving the Hummer there. I drive a little two-seater hybrid Honda Insight. Wonderful little car, especially when you're going out with a bunch of friends and you're like, sorry guys, can't drive, don't have space, gotta take your car. But I once went to a conference and I parked in between two Hummers. It was awesome. I took a photo. And then I lost the photo, which is really bummish. So maybe God was trying to say, hey, Ben, you think you're so great? You think you're going to be a Pharisee? So, yeah.
I have a few resources, or maybe a different one.
Sure.
Do you know of a good resource for promotional material? It's also in the South, so like a lot of people don't care.
Okay.
So, I guess just like a good, simple, like paragraph statement maybe that expresses.
Okay. Well, there are lots of things that I could point you to. One is the Evangelical Declaration on the Care of Creation. It was signed by hundreds and hundreds of very senior, well-known evangelical leaders. You'll probably find people that folks in your campus respect deeply who have signed that. That's available online through the Evangelical Environmental Network, creationcare.org. If you want to talk about climate change, christiansandclimate.org, the Evangelical Climate Initiative, has a very good, succinct statement about that in particular. If you go to our website, renewingcreation.org, for renewal, you'll find, you know, we have kind of mission and purpose statements, and that really sums up things there. So, yeah, lots of stuff buried in there. Did you have a question?
Yeah, how has it infiltrated your life? And what are things that you've had to sacrifice?
My burgers! Sorry, is that... I'll let you finish your question.
Yeah, that...
Okay.
I've been trying to practice personally, but I sometimes forget about things. I guess I'm just not educated enough.
Sure.
So
as I've gotten more into this, what are the things I've given up? What are the changes I made? How have I sacrificed, or how has that impacted my life? This is a journey. We're all on this journey together. We're always going to be on this journey. And so we walk it together. I'm on the journey. I'm learning a lot. But here's some of the stuff we do. I carpooled down here. Abrana was going to pay for my flight, but I didn't want to take a plane. And so I paid for my carpool ride down here because I care about it enough. You know, I care about it. So it's not something I feel obligated to do. It's something I want to do. I am not a vegetarian, but I eat very little beef, as you have guessed. And I I just don't eat as much meat anymore. I'm not opposed to eating meat, but I try to cut back because it's much more sustainable. And sometimes we do meat fasts, you know, for a couple days a week, we just won't have meat. It's a good practice, by the way. It really challenges your cooking skills if you can't just warm up a burrito or microwave a pizza or vice versa. We change all of our light bulbs to compact fluorescents. We turn our lights off a lot, use a space heater in a small room during the winter instead of heating the whole apartment. I live with a lot of other people so that we take up less space and we have a good community. Recycle, compost, I have a garden. We shower together. No, I'm kidding. We use low flow shower heads and we take shorter showers. It's in the book, but I found that Piano Man, Billy Joel, 5.5 minutes long. Press play, by the time the song's done, gotta be out of the shower, it's perfect. Gives you something to sing along with, wonderful. So being fun, being creative, stuff like that, you know? And it's easy to think we're sacrificing, and in some way we are. But I spent 3 months in Tanzania with a science research project on Lake Tanganyika. Basically, my background is in fisheries science. And a team of us were brought out there, second deepest lake in the world in the Great Rift Valley of Africa. It's amazing to study the fishery because it was collapsing. And millions of the poorest people in the world depend on that fishery for their primary source of protein and for anything that they can bring into the market to sell for whatever else they need, especially school fees for their kids. And there are also a lot of war zones around that lake. Congo and Burundi abut the lake. And so huge refugee problem. And so I went there and we were studying it. By the way, that was when I got really sick. Got Giardia. I don't know why I mentioned this, just because it's fun. Freaks people out. Explosive diarrhea for 3 weeks. And then I got malaria at the same time. Well, that was fun. But around those episodes, studying the lake and studying the fishery, we figured out that what was going on was actually the regional climate was shifting. there was a warming taking place, and that warming was causing a diminishing in the winds that would blow across the lake, which would be what mixed the water. It actually sent the water in a cycle, and the mixing would dredge up all the nutrients at the bottom and bring them to the top, which is where all the life lived. And so basically the idea was the lake wasn't getting its nutrients to where the sunlight was, so the plankton wasn't growing, the little fish didn't have food, the big fish didn't have food, the whole ecosystem was collapsing, and people were at the top and they didn't have food. But the root of the problem wasn't overfishing. Fishing pressure was constant. The root of the problem was that the climate was changing. And so the fishermen, these really poor fishermen, and they're really cool, dugout canoes that are really hard to paddle and very heavy, would come up to me, "What can we do?" They didn't say that, they said it in Swahili, but "What can we do?" And I didn't have an answer for them. You know why? Because we're the ones that have 2 to 3 cars per household. We're the ones that have TVs in multiple rooms that we leave running. Something. We're the ones that take plane trips back and forth across the country, and I do some of this every year. We're the ones that are causing a lot of the pollution, a lot of the climate change that is taking place around the world today. Not them. We're the ones to blame. And I realized that. When they asked me, "What can we do?" and I said, "Nothing." I came back and I said, "I need to get on this. My life, and I need to share this message." We're not sacrificing nearly as much as they're sacrificing. And the thing that I need to I always remember is that they're really sacrificing because they're not the problem to begin with, and they're paying the cost. We're not really sacrificing because we are the problem in a lot of ways. And we're really, what we're called to do is give up a little bit here and there. I mean, the more we give up, the better, I think. But it's hard for me to talk about sacrifice without remembering the people that I met there and what they're going through. So, hey, one more question. Did you have a question?
I was just
sustainable when I'm talking about meat?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Well, this is something you could probably Google and get better numbers than I'm going to be able to tell you right now off the top of my head because I don't remember. Okay, well, basically, it takes a lot of resources to produce meat. Meat is at the top of the food chain, so it takes a lot of, you lose energy each time you jump a trophic level. And so when you talk about cows, it takes a lot of water to produce 1 pound of beef, a lot of water. It takes a lot of grain to produce 1 pound of beef. We produce enough grain in this country. We produce enough food in the world, produce in the world, to feed everybody. But about 90% of the grain, and this is again an old number, but 90% of the grain in this country goes to feed cows, not people. And so, allocation of resources, we don't have enough food for everybody in the world, let alone everybody in this country. So that's why I think the lower you eat on the food chain, the more sustainable you are in that sense. That said, there are people who make a very good case for vegetarianism being a moral good. And I don't think as Christians we're necessarily required to be vegetarians. There are some good arguments for why it helps the planet now. But if you eat meat, I eat meat. Just be wise about how we eat meat and how much we do. So anyway. Okay, last question. No, then.
Well, I was just going to make a comment, but if you're talking about meat, it's always good.
Yeah, and then, but see, these are complicated issues because guess what? One of the biggest causes of deforestation in the Amazon is clear cutting for growing soy. So, you know, sometimes while trying to do something good, we end up doing something just as bad. It's really hard. And so, why don't I close by praying for us? Because that's one thing we know is good. Father, we thank you for this time. Thank you that we could be together. And thank you that you're in control and that we trust you and we follow you. Father, help us, please, to live better on this earth, to live better with one another, to be better witnesses. Give us wisdom and grace to understand the right decisions to make and the right lives to choose to live and to do those things. But then also, Father, please keep us humble and help us to see where we're wrong, where we make mistakes. And in all things, help us to love like you love. We love you, Father, and pray in Jesus' name. Amen. I'm here if you guys have questions.